How strong are the democratic principles? How strong are the methods of changing power?
I think most historians of France would agree that the dynamics of French history has been determined by a series of dates, 1789, 1830, 1848, 1870, 1941, 1968. These are all moments where there's a convulsion and there are either revolutions or near revolutions when power is confronted by the people. I have never known such disarray in French politics. I've never known such anger and hate, and I've been in France for several decades, towards...
I want to talk about Macron. So what's unbelievable by American political terms is where a third party would come in and not only win the presidential election, but also win the legislative election as well. How do we explain how a third party could sweep and then almost moments later, seemingly rejected by a large portion of the population and the Yellow Jackets? How do you have both a democratic revolution in one moment and at the very next moment see such anger and disgust of the new regime?
I think you've got straight to the heart of the issue here. Macron had no political tribe behind him. You can think of French politics going right back to the revolution as a tribe divided between right and left. So the democratic revolution of the centrist coming in is a kind of invention of a new form of politics, which turns out to be an illusion. Macron is bound to fail because of great big macro and geopolitical, macroeconomic and geopolitical factors that he can't control. And when the generation that have voted him in discovers this fact, they're going to feel politically homeless and they're going to feel betrayed. And that's why, you know, I started off the talk by talking about my shock at the anger, because what I didn't say was that the people who were throwing stones and rioting, they weren't just young kids smashing things up. There were people my age, late 50s, who were seeing their pensions being eroded. They were seeing a future of poverty. I think the French people feel they've been let down by somebody who's a globalized, English-speaking cosmopolitan, but has no connection to the real French.
I want to talk about Marine Le Pen next. In her previous election, she was anti-Euro. She was anti-European Union. What are your thoughts on the role of the Yellow Jackets and their support of Marine Le Pen? And why is Marine Le Pen shifting to a more pro-European stance?
I think Marine Le Pen has moved away from the position of what was called Frexit, because the failure of Brexit, the British experiment, is seen to have failed, and it seems to be high risk in France. So Marine Le Pen is just actually reflecting popular opinion. Now, as far as the Yellow Jackets and support for Marine Le Pen, I think it's very complicated, because the Gilets Jaunes are not one homogenous political group. They have no leader, they have no spokesperson, and they don't seem to have any kind of ideology. There are people involved in the far right, there are nationalist groups, but there are also people involved in the far left. Most French people are not naturally fascists. They're not naturally supporters of the far right. They're not naturally supporters of Marine Le Pen. And she has failed very badly in these regional elections. They failed to win a single region. I believe it was the soft power of the working class. If you despise them enough, they're going to push back. But it doesn't mean that they're going to push back in terms of expressing nationalist ideology. They're not necessarily homophobic. They're not necessarily racist. They're represented in French culture, which presents them like that. And I think that's where a lot of the anger comes.
I want to go back to that riot you were in. It's shocking for an American listener, because we've had race-related riots during the Black Lives Matter movement here in the United States. They lasted a couple of days. And what seemed to be different was that the Yellow Jackets seemed to be going on for weeks, and they didn't have any specific demands, and that there was real anger. What is that? What do they want? What are they trying to accomplish? And how will this play out?
Started off actually as a peaceful protest, but a hike in gas prices in the countryside, which Macron had imposed, was a grassroots movement with people wearing the yellow jackets round about. Why they were complaining was because there's no transport infrastructure in the countryside. There's very few buses. The great trains, the TGV, they connect the great cities. But if you're trying to get from Paris to the rural north, then it's actually very, very difficult. They are literally physically disconnected from France. It turned into a weekly spectacle. Now, if you live in Paris, as I do and I have done for a long time, you get used to demonstrations, and often they do end in violence, and often, you know, towards the end of the evening, kids will come in and start smashing stuff up, setting fire to cars and so on. But what was interesting about the Gilets Jaunes was it seemed to be both spontaneous and driven by emotion. In other words, it wasn't just the sort of casual kind of, we're just going to fight the police. They were like stage battles. And I have to say as well that, you know, I'm speaking from the left, but I'm not necessarily an enemy of the police. The police were actually sort of caught in the middle between the realpolitik of the government and the Gilets Jaunes. And you could see the Gilets Jaunes shouting at the police, why aren't you on our side? Why aren't you on our side? Because the police as well have been underpaid. They're often the target of attacks in the banlieue.
We had an author, Paul Embry. He wrote a book called Despised, Why the Modern Left Loathes the Working Class. Paul mentions that a very similar sort of phenomena exists in the UK, that there was an enormous number of working class communities who've always been Labour, and in the last major election, they voted Conservative. Labour has gone globalist, cosmopolitan, opposed to breakfast. All the ideas that you described about the French elite, he also describes as the English elite. And the British working class, the very people that you know and grew up with in Liverpool, have switched parties. And I'm wondering how you think about that same phenomenon that exists in the UK. How does it compare and contrast with what you're seeing in France?
I think the phenomenon in the UK of formerly, you know, traditional Labour communities voting for Conservative is very parallel in France. But I think the one thing that they do have in common is that they feel despised by a left which seems to promote minorities over majorities. Labour keeps failing in Britain because it no longer represents the family that originally gave birth to it, you know, and it's true. My dad voted Conservative in the last election. He's an old style, you know, working class guy from Liverpool. But why is he interested in LGBT rights or transphobia rights or whatever? You know, he's not interested at all. It doesn't mean that he's homophobic or racist or anything like that. It means that, you know, these are not things which interest him.
I hear from my French Jewish friends that it is unlivable for a Jewish person to live in France today.
I don't know whether it's unlivable, but it's very, very difficult and very frightening to be a Jew in France these days. I say this because I have a small group of very close group of Jewish friends, some of whom have, you know, family who went to the camps and family who survived the occupation. There's two deep wounds that have never really healed. One is the extent to which the French, for a long time, denied any active participation in what happened during the Second World War. The Jews are seen as a target by two very specific groups in France at the moment. And this is a very taboo subject, but it's true. One group that hates the Jews and blames the Jews is the Muslim population of France. Not all of them, of course, but to a large extent, and certainly the extreme Islamist population, blames the Jews for the Israel-Palestine conflict. And then what they do is they map that template of the Israel-Palestine conflict onto the way they feel in France. So, you know, you'll see kids walking around the banlieue with T-shirts identifying themselves with Gaza and things like that. and that they see French, the French are like the Israelis, and, you know, it's occupied territory, the Jews control everything, and so on. And then you've got a very separate population which thinks the same thing, but is coming from a completely different angle. And this is the extreme form of Catholicism and right-wing nationalism. But I attended an anti-gay marriage demonstration organized by Catholics. And the graffiti at the end baffled me. As the demonstration broke up, there were two slogans, one of which said, death to homos, and the other one said, death to Jews. What was the connection between the two? The only connection I could make was that Jews represent modernity. They represent culture, civilized values, and so on. And these are the things that reactionary Catholics with a nostalgia reject, and they see, you know, same-sex marriages as part of that, you know, modernity. And it's strange how the mainly white, far-right Catholic groups speak the same language as the angry jihadis of the banlieue. Once again, the Jews are the victims, are the people to be blamed for everything that goes wrong in France. A Jewish friend of mine, born in Tunisia, came to France when Tunisia became independent, and he said, when I was a young man, France was a paradise for Jews. Now it's turning into an inferno.
I get that. Switching back to the Muslim population, I was first introduced to you by your book, The French Intifada. It described a sort of cancer growing just outside of suburban Paris, where there were these two communities that were not only not getting along, but where it seemed potentially getting ready for war. Yes, the yellow jackets have taken the news, and yes, Macron has changed the political dynamics slightly, but is that problem still festering?
It's going to be an enormous problem in the years ahead. Now, since 2015, the year of the Charlie Hebdo massacre, I think there's been a very hard-headed military and intelligence of operations which have kind of muted a lot of Islamist activity. It's been reduced more to a problem of criminality, which it isn't. It's an ideological problem. By the same token, the disaffection which makes jihadis, and this is what I was interested in the French Intifada, hasn't gone away. And I'm going to be very honest about my opinions here. I think it's important that the banlieue are improved physically and economically, and transport is improved, and unemployment is improved. But that is not the whole answer. And you've read The French Intifada, it's very taboo, and I've got into a lot of trouble for saying this, is that this is not just about politics, it's about psychoanalysis. And, you know, I say this because if you follow the pattern of the young jihadi, young guy, smokes dope, hangs out, acts like a gangster, it's girls, drugs, showing off, etc., minor criminality, maybe gets locked up, and then starts to question who he is, what he is, where his identity is. And I did a lot of work in French prisons. I could see that French prisons were the engine room of radicalism in France. Because what happens is that this prototype guy meets somebody, a self-proclaimed imam, who says, This is what the problem is. The problem is that you're not French, that you don't belong here. You belong in Muslim civilization, and you have the possibility to actually become a soldier for God. I don't like to be an apocalyptic doomsayer. See, I think this is a reality. If there is an answer, I don't know what it is.
We don't spend a lot of time in the United States thinking about the French Civil War in Algeria. Algeria was a part of France. It was like a state. And there were millions of French civilians living there. They were living a French life. When the Algerians voted overwhelmingly among its Muslim population for an independent Algeria, the French moved from Algeria back to the mainland. But they also brought with them a substantial number of Muslim Algerians who had helped fight for France. And now it's that very population that has been unable to assimilate. How will France deal with that?
The population you're referring to are called Aki. That's the Arabic term which describes the people who fought for France. To the end of the Algerian War in 1962, a lot of these people were abandoned and left in Algeria. And when they came to France, they found that Mother France didn't really care for them. They were given bad shantytown housing, and they were caught between two worlds, an Algeria which was independent and proud and becoming even more Muslim, and a country they fought for but which didn't recognize or honor the sacrifices that they'd made. But that belongs to the 1960s and 70s, and the real challenge, which are now the fourth and I think fifth generations of that population, who wonder how they've ended up in this situation. And I think that, you know, the Algerian War has never, ever gone away in the psyche of either the French people or the French Muslim population of France. For example, I interviewed the footballer Zinedine Zidane several years ago, is of Algerian origin. France played Algeria football, soccer, in 2001, and there was a riot. The pitch was invaded and the match was abandoned, and he said it was the worst moment of his life. And of course, Zidane had won the World Cup for France and was regarded as the great symbol of unity. But what the fans were chanting at that match, and which left Zidane in tears, was the phrase, Zidane a qui? Zidane a qui? Zidane was a traitor who was working for the French. And there's a long-standing myth in the Bologna that Zidane comes from a family of Aquis. And when I asked him about this, he didn't want to talk about it.
That's an incredible story. One of the aspects that I think shocked me was an army coup attempt against De Gaulle during the Algerian Civil War, when De Gaulle was unwilling to continue to push for French continued ownership of Algeria. The French army, the air force, the paratroopers attempted a coup, and for a G7 country to have attempted a coup as recently as the early 1960s, it's truly a shock. To what extent, if the French army, if they see disorder, if the rioting in the streets gets out of control, do you think there's a potential for a coup in France today?
From generals, mainly retired generals from the French army, but then backed up by a petition by several thousand serving soldiers who said that, you know, they were prepared to step in and a civil war was brewing. This is a very small minority group of people, but it had to be taken seriously. 70% of people in a poll actually agreed with the complaints that the generals were making, that that the Bogne were out of control, that they were out there in Mali or wherever they were in the Sahel fighting radical Islam, dying at the hands of Islamists, while they felt the French government were making concessions towards them. So if you're living in Bordeaux or Nice or Paris, it might seem ridiculous, the idea of a coup. But it's not so far away that the near coup that you described in 1961 happened in what is now a G7 treaty, that France really did stand on the brink of a civil war. The United States and France, as far as I'm aware, are the only two countries which are built on an idea, the pursuit of happiness, and in France, liberté, égalité, fraternité. And the role of the army in France is to be an agent of the Republic. The role of the police, the gendarmerie, is to defend the Republic. And when they see the killing of the execution, the beheading of priests or teachers, as such was the case in November with the teacher Samuel Paty, it's the idea of the Republic is like a kind of secular religion. And the role of the army, the role of the police, is to defend the values of this.
You mentioned French perceptions of Brexit, and you mentioned that the belief in France is that Brexit has not been effective. It hasn't worked. First of all, why do you believe that? Second, the vaccine has been successfully distributed in the UK, and it's been a bit delayed in France and the rest of the European Union, and that failure couldn't be indicative of problems of a supranational government dealing with a crisis versus a nation state.
Initially, there was a small group of French people, mainly on the right, who thought that maybe Britain had done the right thing and that this was going to work. But I think what they've seen from the French side of the channel is not the success, but rather a shambles. France has been very vaccine skeptical because in 2008 a new diabetes drug came out and killed quite a lot of people. So people are very, you know, anxious about the dangers of rolling out new drugs. I can't think of a single person that I know from different social strata or from different political camps who thinks Brexit's been a success.
I like to end each session on a note of optimism.
I'm a believer in the working class in France. I think the abstentionism in the recent elections shows a very healthy suspicion of the political classes at the moment. But in the long term, it's always been the French working classes that have been the backbone of the nation. And I say that because I come from a Liverpool working class background and I kind of have first-hand knowledge of how actually true that is. And that's what is driving me to write the book at the moment. It's called France, the Invisible Nation. And I'm optimistic that the long history of the working class in France will outlive the short-term history of 21st century globalization.
Andrew, thank you.